Senate Agriculture and Veterans Committee will come to order. We're going to start right out. A long dig, a long schedule. We'll wait for more members coming, and we'll do a little bit more. So we're going to start right out. First, we have two bills today. Senate File Number 7, Senator Betzel's, and then we have Senate File Number 201, Senator Dills. Senator Betzel, you're on front.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We do appreciate giving a hearing on this very important issue. We do have a very short video, and what I'd propose to do is start that up right now, and we can start the video rolling, and by the time the video finishes, hopefully we'll get the rest of the members in here, and we can start discussing the bills before us. So if we can start the video, that will sort of set the stage for the discussion that we're going to be having here.
Coughing uncontrollably, and that was from the minute we got off the truck. At night, it was almost like I got to die. For example, puppy's paws slip through openings in their cage floor, but Buck told her staff to only use mats when inspectors are around. Another example, dunking dogs in a tub of diluted insecticide, normally used for livestock. The label lists the hazards to humans and domestic animals. Irreversible eye damage may be fatal if swallowed, harmful if absorbed through skin.
But look at the dog is licking it.
Chair, that's the end of the video. The bill before you, I guess both bills, would regulate the breeding of cats and dogs in Minnesota. Obviously, there is no intention, or it's not even possible, to regulate the breeding of every single animal. Basically, the bill that I'm presenting would be concerned with commercial breeders, people who do this as part of a business, or where they're having, under the bill I have, six or more intact females, dogs, or cats. This is a consumer issue. People purchase puppies and kittens. They become very attached to their pets. And frankly, we have some very good breeders in Minnesota, people who are very responsible and very caring. And we also have some bad breeders, people who are irresponsible, people who do not pay the proper concerns to the conditions under which these animals are bred. Some people just do it with a small breed. Others do it with 50, 100, even 2,000 animals. Some people make a lot of money selling and breeding these little critters. The Humane Society estimates that there is about 1 million puppies sold from so-called puppy mills in Minnesota. The conditions, as you've seen on the video, are abominable. You have the mothers and the puppies living in cramped cages with wire floors so that the waste drops through. Or they have cages that are lined in urine and soaked with feces. They have the animals are suffering from malnutrition, confinement in overcrowded cages, limited to little or no exercise, lack of veterinarian care, exposure to the elements, no bedding, no protection from the heat and cold, health problems. Puppies that can be put in crates travel for hundreds of miles, often without adequate food or water, shelter, or ventilation. Those which survive and to the pet stores can be sold for $400 to $1,000. As I say, this is a consumer issue. We don't really have a lot of laws on the books dealing with these kinds of situations. In 1994, the legislature passed a law dealing with best practices. It's really not enforceable. There's really no penalties. All it did was encourage best practices. We do have a pet lemon law, which says if somebody purchases a sick animal, they can get a refund, make an exchange, and get reimbursed for veterinary costs. People become attached to those pets, though. That doesn't really get to the root of the problem. Again, the problem are the irresponsible breeders. I wish we could just pass a law that says that it's illegal to be a bad breeder. But as you know, that is not possible. In order to pass meaningful legislation, we have to be able to identify who is really a responsible breeder. We have to identify the conditions, the standards under which the breeders should be breeding their animals. We should have some sort of a meaningful way of checking up on the breeders to make sure those standards are being met. And we have to have some penalties for violations of those standards. Just some background. Again, some people who've been tracking this bill know that I've introduced some bills in the past on this. I did introduce two bills in the previous legislative biennium. There was one bill, it was Senate File 121, that was very detailed. It had a lot of standards and so forth. People were quite concerned about that. They felt that it was quite onerous to have all those standards put into law. So we backed off. We introduced another bill, Senate File 2922, in the last biennium. Instead of setting the standards, we decided to try to have the Board of Animal Health propose rulemaking. We didn't set the standards. We were going to have them do it. People were concerned about that as well, too. So the bill that you have before you from me, Senate File 7, does not prescribe the standards, and it doesn't even have the rulemaking from the Board of Animal Health. I just want to make sure that people understand that. Now, over the past year or so, I've heard some opposition, some concerns from people, and we've tried to address them, and you'll be here some from today, I'm sure. And I do want to address some of those issues. First of all, we've heard over and over people say that there's a U.S. Department of Agriculture standards. Those should be enough. People are afraid that there's more stringent standards. They don't want government inspectors coming on their properties. The USDA does have some standards. They are really not very comprehensive. They are responsible for enforcing the Federal Animal Welfare Act. That applies to dealers who have USDA licenses. That is dealers and breeders who sell directly to pet stores. Breeders who sell directly to the public do not have to be licensed. If they sell it through the ads, if they sell it on the internet, there's no USDA license. So there's a number of breeders out there that absolutely are not even applied to by USDA standards, whatever they happen to be. The USDA is not really in a position to even enforce whatever meager standards they do happen to have. There is over 220 USDA licensed facilities in Minnesota, not just breeders, facilities, everything that the USDA must inspect. And there's less than three USDA inspectors for the whole state of Minnesota. They have to inspect zoos, they have to inspect research laboratories, circuses, animals transported on commercial airlines. Even if they inspect, and even if they find violations, there's really no means of enforcement by the USDA. Now, the good breeders, the responsible breeders, I think should welcome good, meaningful legislation. Because if our goal is to put the bad breeders out of business, that helps the good breeders. It provides confidence for the consumers. The people who buy little puppies and little kittens should have some confidence that the puppies and kittens are going to buy are bred in healthy conditions. And if you get rid of the bad breeders, that helps the good breeders. And frankly, if they get rid of the bad breeders, the good breeders should be able to get more business from that. I think that's a win situation for the good breeders. Let me just take a few minutes and go through the bill that I have before you, Senate File 7, and then I know Senator Dill has a bill that he will be presenting, then we will go to our witnesses. The biggest difference, as I say, with the Senate file that you had before you, Senate File 7, is we do not provide detailed standards. We do not even provide a rulemaking process to come up with the standards. This bill, Senate File 7, simply requires that if the Board of Animal Health ensure that breeders comply with existing anti-cruelty laws and ordinances and federal regulations. Let me go through the bill. In Section 1, we're defining what a breeder is. My definition provides anybody who is engaged in the business of breeding animals for direct or indirect sale and who possesses six or more adult intact female purposes for the purpose of breeding. It doesn't matter whether you're a big breeder or a small breeder. There are good, responsible breeders, big and small, and there are irresponsible breeders, big and small. So the number is not of consequence. As I say, we can't regulate every animal that is born in the state. Six was a rather arbitrary number. I'll acknowledge that. I mean, it could have been four. It could have been eight. But I think if anybody owns six animals that they are breeding and selling the animals, they're in the business of breeding. And as I say, there are breeders that certainly have many more than that, but certainly there are a lot of the problems do come with the people who are small breeders. Section 2 provides licensing and inspections. Now, the Board of Animal Health is the licensing and inspection authority under this bill. They can also designate that authority to a city or a county. Now, we sort of have a phase-in period in this bill because, of course, we do not able to get any kind of an appropriation to pay for this. It has to pay for itself, and this bill does. We would have a pre-licensing inspection starting in July of 2010 for the breeders who are required to be licensed. And then starting a year later, there would be annual inspections. The Board of Animal Health would set the licensing fee. I will be proposing an amendment to the bill shortly to have a sliding fee arrangement. So the small breeders would pay a smaller fee, and the large breeders would pay a larger fee. At this time, of course, it's difficult to say exactly what the fee would be, simply because, again, that has to be determined through the legislative process and by the Board of Animal Health. But it's my view that it should be along that way, where the smaller breeders pay the smaller fee. The standards of care in this particular bill is vastly changed from the bills that I have previously introduced. We require the breeders to comply with existing laws, existing ordinances, and existing regulations. I don't know how anybody could find fault with that. We currently have anti-cruelty laws on the books. Why would anybody say they should be exempt from doing that? Although the laws that are on the books do not cover everything, however, they really are silent on to breeding practices. So as is typical in legislation, we do provide some guidance in this bill to the agency, the Board of Animal Health, to issues that need to be considered that are unique to breeding issues. And that is what you will see in this bill. An important requirement also in this bill is that we believe that down the road we should cap off the very large breeders. So the organizations, the breeders that currently have large stocks would be grandfathered in, although they would be able to replace on a in the future one-to-one their breeding stock. But it would prevent other breeders in the future from getting up to more than 50 adult animals for breeding purposes. Section 4 of the bill does have a process for investigations, and we provide for due process in the investigations as when the civil enforcement. We have seizures. Currently, our current laws already provide for seizures of animals that are mistreated. We just follow current law. Section 6 is civil enforcement penalties, where we have correction orders for minor violations, penalties, enforcement orders, and hearings in the process for doing that. Penalties, we have misdemeanors for people who violate this law, whether it's pet stores who are selling animals at from USDA, from non-USDA licensed breeders or non-licensed breeders, or people who are breeding without a license. We have an account that is being set up, again, to collect the money that will be used to pay for the inspectors and a registration process. Mr. Chair, I don't know, you don't have a quorum yet, but at the appropriate time, I will have the A1 amendment that does provide for the sliding fee provision in this bill. So, Mr. Chair and members, that is a quick walkthrough of Senate File 7. I guess I would defer to Senator Dill. I realize that he has a different bill, Senate File 201, and I assume that you would like to hear from him. I'll stand for any questions that you may have on my particular bill before we proceed, Mr. Chair.
Members, I would like to do, we'll let both Senator Betzel and Senator Dill present their bill. Then we're going to take some public testimony on the two bills. And after we finish with that, then committee members can ask questions, author and offer amendments. So rather, because there's a lot of people who want to testify, Senator Corning, just keep your write it down. Would that be okay? And Senator Betts, I know you've worked long and hard on this.
Sure. We'll defer to the chair, however you wish to set it up. I do realize there's a lot of people who want to be heard, and we want to make sure that we give everybody the opportunity to do so.
Senator Dill, why don't you tell us about your bill now?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
That's 201.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 201 is a bill that tries to cut the cost of regulation on this particular issue. And before I get into that, my general position this legislative session is to try to resist things that cost government or the private sector any extra money, because we're in a recession, and I'm reticent to impose new regulations and new cost on either the government or the private sector because of the economic situation we're in. And I can imagine that in the dog and cat business, it's not easy to sell these products into the market under the current economic conditions that we're in. So to add additional fees and inspections and cost to upgrade facilities at this time, I'm reluctant to do that. So what I tried to do in the bill before you, Senate File 201, is to take an approach that is similar to the way we handle feedlots and to try to keep the cost down to as low a number as possible. Now, I do have a fiscal note that I just received on my bill, and I think in your packet you've got at least have one from Senator Betzel's bill. And the one I got, I just on my bill just showed up here. I just saw it just before I walked in here, and I haven't had a chance to really read it in detail. But the bill that I've got is going to require the Board of Animal Health to hire one additional person. It's going to cost about $100,000 roughly per year. Senator Betzel's bill, it requires up to four additional employees at the Board of Animal Health. And the additional cost, is about $250,000, $240,000 or so, $220,000 a year. I believe that's, is that correct? At any rate, it's more expensive. So here's the approach that I took on the bill before you. First of all, I'm not going to apply additional regulations to anybody that's already USDA inspected. Now, I have a delete everything amendment in your packet. Maybe we should deal with that first to get the bill in front of you as I would like to. If I could move the A2 amendment, Mr. Chairman, I'd appreciate that.
Senator Dill moves the A2 amendment to get this bill in order, to delete all amendments, to get the bill in order that he'd like to have it. Are there any questions on that? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopts it.
Mr. Chair, members, the way the bill was introduced, there was an error in the definition of breeder and hobby breeder in terms of the number of animals that would be regulated. We've got that corrected here, and it'll be the threshold, which I've got in the bill right now, is 20 adult intact female animals. Above that level, we'd regulate. Below that level, we would not regulate. Furthermore, we would not regulate anybody that is already inspected by the United States Department of Agriculture, which would be those producers that are selling to the wholesale market. But if they're selling directly to the consumer, that's the group that's not regulated now, and they would be regulated under this bill if they have more than 20 breeding females. Now, one important difference here is that I'm trying to bring in the county feedlot inspectors into this regulatory system that I'm proposing, because I think it's a lot more cost-effective to have somebody that's right there within the county dealing with livestock issues to go out and do the inspection, rather than hire somebody from St. Paul, say out of the Board of Animal Health, and have them travel all over the state of Minnesota, which is costly, and a lot of these producers are small producers. It might be kind of hard to catch them at home, whereas if you've got the county feedlot inspector involved, they're busy out there in the community inspecting and available and so forth. It would be a lot easier and cheaper for them to do that. But if you take a look on page one of the delete all amendment on line 1.2, I'm identifying the local animal control authority who is going to be doing this work to mean it could be the Board of Animal Health, it could be some other agency of the state, county, municipality, or political subdivision of the state that is responsible for animal control operations or feedlots in its jurisdiction. So there's a broad range of people that could be involved in this. Now, the way I wanted to handle this is to handle it like we do with the small feedlots in this state. We have them register every 4 years with their local, usually it's the county. And at that point in time, they're of course informed of what all the rules are and given, and that's what I would want to do with these dog operations. They have them register with their local animal control authority. And at that time, they would be given a copy of the rules. And then as far as regular inspection goes, that would be up to the local counties or the local authorities if they want to inspect them at the time of registration or annually. Or in my county, they inspect the feedlots every 5 years. They can have some flexibility on that. But if something comes up where they want some additional inspection assistance, then the Board of Animal Health gets into the act. And that's identified on page 2, line 2.10, investigations and corrections of violations. If the request for further investigation is, it comes from an animal control officer, feedlot inspector, peace officer, sheriff, or something like that, the Board of Animal Health would go out there without charge to do the investigation. But if it comes from a citizen who thinks there's a problem out there, acting in an unofficial capacity, the language I've got in here from lines 2.14 to 2.21 came out of the Board of Animal Health rules, and it's something they very rarely use, but I stuck it in here anyway, and that is that they would require a $100 deposit to go out and do this investigation, and if it turns out to be a valid problem, then the person gets those $100 back. If it's not valid, the board gets to keep the $100. So that's how that works. Now the main inspection would be based on complaints, but like I said, the local people could inspect more frequently if they should so choose. And then we're giving another key point here is that we're giving the dog producers a choice of two different sets of rules, which may not seem entirely appropriate. But right here, I've got a copy of the USDA regulations. It's 136 pages of regulations. And you're going to hear today that these regulations are not adequate. But when you start paging through here and you sort through 135 pages of how to do it, it's overwhelming. There's so many things in here. And in spite of what some people are going to say today, that USDA regulations are not adequate, there can be testimony here by the dog producers that are inspected about how thorough these people are. They spend hours on these farms checking paperwork and measuring dogs to make sure they fit the right size for the pen they're in and so forth. So there's a lot of stuff in here. But what I want to do is give the dog producer a simpler option. I'm going to pass this out to the committee. This is a copy of the Department of Agriculture's Best Management Standards for the Care of Dogs and Cats, which was developed about 10, 12 years ago, in 1995, 96, somewhere in there. We authorized and told the department to get together with the veterinarians, the dog producers, various experts on dog care, different organizations that represent dog producers, and put together some best management practices. I don't have my name on this. Let me just have an extra one for Senator Vetzel here. I'm sorry I didn't put my name on this handout before it's going out to you, but it's from me.
You're me at the committee.
Pardon? You don't need you in the committee? Okay. But at any rate, this is about a 7 or 8 page document that simply tells you what you've got to do without a lot of complicated razzmatazz like you've got in this 135-page USDA document. So the way I look at this, if we're going to regulate all these dog and cat producers, let's do it at a cost-effective way. Let's start with registration. They register, they get a copy of the rules, they can start upgrading their facilities and making sure they're educated and know what they're supposed to do. And we'll do some inspection to try to educate further and improve things. But let's not bring the heavy hand of government down on them and run up the cost of their doing business in this difficult economic time. And let's not run up the cost for the Board of Animal Health and the rest of government to do this thing. Now, registration is a simple thing that we can start with, and after a year or two, when the economy improves and so forth, if we want to get more heavy-handed on this thing and hire more inspectors and do more work in that area, that's something we can do later. But let's try to use a little caution to start with, a carrot instead of a stick so much, and then I'd have to say even based on my own previous statement is about trying to keep down the cost of regulation and cost of government. This cost that I see in this, on my own fiscal note for my own bill, at one additional person that the board would have to hire to do this is almost more than I want to do. But at least if we're going to do something, let's do something that's less costly and a little bit more cautious in this economic climate that we're in.
Senator Dale, are you done presenting your bill? I'm going to have to go to Senator Betzel, and you have a chance to add something to it.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I didn't know if you'd had a quorum previously, but I do have the A1 amendment to my bill, and this is an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape I desire. As I indicated previously, what this does was that it just modifies the fee arrangement to provide a sliding fee scale so that, again, the smaller breeders would pay a smaller fee than the higher ones do. That's all what the A amendment would do. So if somebody on the committee would move that, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that to get the bill into the shape that Senator Betzel wants it to be in.
Senator Corey moves adoption of the amendment. Any discussion? Senator Robb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. Senator Betzel, I like the idea of the sliding fee. Where would that money be directed and to what purpose?
Mr. Chair and Senator Erickson Ropes, the bill does create a special fund that is going to be collected from the registration and the fees, and then that fund would be used to pay for the inspectors. So that part is actually in the dog and cat breeders licensing account appropriation would be in on page 8, line 19. That's the part that sets that up. That's where the money would go.
Mr. Chair, follow-up question. Thank you, Senator Betzel. Then if there is a cost to the local government unit or whoever the enforcer is that's going out to do these inspections, say they have to bring some animals in, or how does that get paid for?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, again, with the idea of this being cost neutral, my concept would be that the Board of Animal Health would have the funds to hire the inspectors. Now, the bill does provide that they can basically subcontract, they can send the responsibilities out to the local areas, but since the board has the money, presumably they would also be sending the money out to the people locally who would be doing the inspecting if the board is not doing it themselves. Mr.
Discussion?
Chair, I do have one or two other handouts I would like the committee to receive. You do have a copy of the fiscal note that was prepared for Senate File 7.
Senator Betzel?
Mr. Chair?
We haven't moved to
A1. Oh, I'm sorry. You haven't voted on that yet. Okay. I'm sorry.
You want to move that?
Well, I can't move it, but I believe Senator Corey
made the motion. Senator Corey moves A1 amendment. Everybody have it? Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Well, adopted now, Senator Betzold.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You have the fiscal note for Senate file number 7. I did have a similar bill, as I previously testified, in the previous biennium. A lot of the structure in that bill was the same as this one. I have significantly different fiscal notes, however. And I for the benefit of this committee, which is also a budget division, I'd like you to see not only the fiscal note, but the letter that I sent to the Board of Animal Health pointing out the differences between the previous one and this one. Basically, of course, this one is a lot more expensive. I can't understand some of the differences, although they were talking in the previous fiscal note of a $900 fee. This one is $250. That was changed by the amendment you just adopted. There's a lot of things that I just can't understand, but as I say, sometimes with fiscal notes, it's difficult to explain. I'm sorry. Let me give a copy to Senator Dill as well here, too. So just for your benefit, because you are a budget division, I do realize that you need to pay attention to it, but I would be a little – I'd ask a lot of questions about the fiscal note that was given to you about this one. Thank you.
Well, members, I think what we'll do then is go to the people that drove up there. Quite a big list for testifiers. Maybe Senator Dale and Senator Betzel, if you could just move over just a little bit so we can get to testify or wherever you want to do.
Maybe I can grab a chair here next to you.
Thank you. So we'll start with Beryl Board, co-executive director of the Retrieve Golden of Minnesota. Come forward and let's hear your testimony. Welcome to the committee, and I need your name for the record.
My name is Beryl Board, and I'm co-executive director of Retrieve a Golden of Minnesota, and I'm here in strong support of SR7. RAGM is a nonprofit golden retriever rescue organization. We have rehomed over 5,000 golden retrievers and mixes since 1985. 2007 was a record year for our group with the intake of over 700 dogs, 213 of which were directly from inhumane breeding facilities. In the last few years, we have seen a dramatic increase in the number of our intakes from irresponsible breeders, both the USDA licensed and non-licensed breeders. As a director of this rescue group, I have unfortunately become somewhat of an expert on dogs brought into rescue from irresponsible breeding practices, and RAGM has become a nationally recognized authority on such intakes. We see very distinct differences in the type of dog that come from a reputable breeder versus those dogs that come from inhumane breeding facilities. The types of issues we face with these rescue dogs can be broken down into two categories, physical and psychological. A long list of physical issues such as eye diseases, ruptured and missing eyes, ear infections, hearing loss from untreated infections, dental diseases and missing teeth, untreated fractures and wounds, including embedded chains and collars. Every type of internal and external parasite and tick-borne disease that a canine could get, debilitating fatty or cancerous tumors, paw sores and wounds from standing on wire cage bottoms, untreated skin infections, allergies, mange, joint and musculature problems due to years of inactivity, kennel cough, pneumonia, respiratory illnesses, inguinal hernias from having too many litters, hip dysplasia and other congenital defects, dehydration, malnutrition, and emaciation. We also see many psychological and behavioral issues, which in my experience are equally as severe. Not uncommon are debilitating fears or phobias, a multitude of anxiety issues and compulsive disorders, and dominance issues and fear aggression type behaviors. There are as many horror stories as there are dogs. Some of these rescued dogs may take years to overcome their crippling fears of common things such as doorways, food dishes, tile, carpeting, or grass, which they have never seen before. Most of the dogs we brought into rescue from inhumane facilities are sick, either with physical or psychological issues or genetic predisposition that will cause future serious health issues. New owners cannot know this, and as a result are duped into purchasing unhealthy animals, which very often end up in rescue. I can give you all the rational reasons why this legislation must be passed, but at the end of the day, if you could only see what I have seen, you would not be struggling with this issue. It is the right thing to do. As a Minnesota citizen devoted to animal welfare and rescue, I urge your support of this long overdue legislation. Over 25 states have enacted puppy mill laws, and I would hope that it's time for Minnesota to do the same. Thank you very much for your time, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Thank you. Next is Shira Engstrom.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Shira Engstrom, and I am here today in strong support of Senate File 7. In March last year, I found a puppy on the internet that I wanted to purchase from a breeder in Brainerd, Minnesota, who was selling schnoodles. The breeder had literally hundreds of dogs and puppies on their website to choose from. I had a schnoodle when I was growing up and knew that when I could have my own dog, that's what I wanted. I put a deposit down on the puppy a month before we were to get her. 1 week before the sale date, the breeder called me to say that other puppies, not mine, she stated, was sick, and that they would have to put our sale date on hold, possibly. The day before our original sale date, the breeder called to say that all was well and we could go ahead as planned. The breeder promised my puppy was healthy and that she was vet-checked by their vet that day. I drove to the breeder's city to pick up the puppy that we named Daisy. We were not allowed on the breeder's property and had to meet him at a nearby park. On our two-hour drive home that day, I heard congestion in Daisy's chest, so the very next day we took her to our veterinarian to be checked. The vet said that Daisy had pneumonia and bronchitis. She was very ill for almost 3 months, and there were a few times where I really thought she might die. We brought her to the University of Minnesota, spent a lot of money, and saved Daisy's life. We made numerous trips back and forth from U of M and our vet. It was physically and mentally exhausting for me and Daisy. There were many days that she couldn't act like the puppy she wanted to be, and many days I had to stay home from work to monitor her. I later found that this happens all too often in Minnesota, doesn't oversee these types of operations. This breeder isn't inspected, and no one knows or cares what conditions these dogs or puppies live in. We need a law that will require inspections of breeders to assure the animals are properly cared for, both for the animal's sake and for those of us who purchase the animal. Please support this important bill so more animals don't suffer and people don't have to go through the heartache and expenses like Daisy and I did. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Next, we have Dr. Gilbertson. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Dr. Kim Culbertson. As a veterinarian directly involved with the seizure and evaluation of animals from breeding facilities, I am here to testify in support of Senate File 7. Almost every animal I have examined from breeding facilities consistently shows the same symptoms and conditions: a matted, filthy coat, wounds and scabs, overgrown nails, dental disease, ear infection, external parasites, and usually multiple species of internal parasites. The parasites that the animals carry are of our particular concern since they can be transmitted to humans. Filthy living conditions coupled with immune suppression from the stress of overcrowding, pregnancy, and lactation increases the incidence that these animals will be infected with and shedding those parasites. Roundworm is the most common intestinal parasite found in virtually all puppies and kittens, and in people causes blindness and infection of body organs, including the central nervous system. Hookworms can cause itchy and painful rashes to abdominal pain, bleeding, and inflammation in people. Ringworm is a fungus that causes scaly or crusty rashes on people. Sarcoptes is a mange mite of the dog that can cause itchy rashes in people. Toxoplasma can cause flu-like symptoms to abortion in pregnant women. Giardia can cause severe abdominal cramps and diarrhea in people. Salmonella bacteria can cause a range of symptoms from diarrhea to death in people. I would like to give you a few examples of my physical exam findings of animals that I have personally examined from breeding facilities. The first case involves 29 purebred dogs that were seized as a neglect investigation based on numerous complaints from purchasers and neighbors. All were dehydrated and filthy with matted feces in their coats. all but five were underweight and two were emaciated. The large breed dogs had calluses on their hips and elbows from lack of bedding. One had an infected ulcer on her hip. All had intestinal parasites, and almost half of those had multiple parasite infections, including malnutrition and anemia. And keep in mind that these parasites are all transmissible to humans. One dog had heartworm disease, a preventable but fatal disease if left untreated. Over half had painful ear infections. Almost half had scabs, scars, wounds, and hair loss. A handful had one of the following conditions: a heart murmur, an abnormal heart rhythm, a splenic mass, or arthritis. A litter of puppies from this seizure had lice and intestinal parasites. They were dehydrated, anemic, lethargic, malnourished, underweight, and two were near death. A second example involves 34 purebred dogs and designer dogs and puppies seized as a neglect investigation based on numerous complaints from purchasers. One adult and one puppy were in critical condition and required emergency care and emergency surgery. Four pups had snotty noses. Most had one or more species of intestinal parasites causing malnutrition and anemia. Three-quarters of the adults had one or more heritable diseases that could be passed on to their litters. Some adults exhibit one of the following conditions: a painful fractured canine tooth, a painful dry eye, which left untreated could lead to loss of the eye, and hip arthritis. My understanding is the committee has photos of the dogs from the following case I'm going to discuss. 59 live breeding dogs and two dead breeding dogs from a puppy mill were seized as a result of a sheriff's investigation based on numerous complaints. One was euthanized immediately due to severe emaciation, dehydration, weakness, inability to stand, eye disease, and blindness. 58, and remember we're talking about 59 dogs, were covered in dried feces. 58 had moderate to severe dental disease. 43 had wounds. 22 had positive intestinal parasite tests. 38 were underweight, and 12 of those were emaciated. 16 had skin infections. 15 had ear infections. 3 had fresh lacerations on the face and ears that required immediate suturing. 2 exhibited aggressive behavior towards people and were euthanized. These are just a few examples of the findings that are unfortunately consistent and predictable for the veterinary staff receiving these animals for evaluation. Not only would the passage of this bill protect the physical and social welfare of the animals in breeding facilities, but would also help protect the people who come in contact with these animals from acquiring a variety of zoonotic diseases. I urge your support of Senate File 7. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Keith Streffen from Senior Humane Agent. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Keith Streff, and I'm the senior investigator for the Animal Humane Society based in Golden Valley. And having worked in that capacity now for about 22 years, it's nice to start to recognize some of the faces that we see years and years over on this particular issue. For the sake of redundancy, I'm going to be brief. Many of the scenarios and examples that were given to you by veterinarians as well as individuals involved with this industry were stemmed from most of the cases that I've done as the point person in that intervention. The seizure of these particular animals comes from a variety of different breeders, and I think we're here today to try and introduce a reasonable, pragmatic bill that will effectively and efficiently address the breeding of pet and companion animals. The bill is not designed or intended to run small breeders out or mid-range breeders or large breeders. I've been out in the field for 20-plus years and have seen hundreds, if not thousands, of breeders from all classes and all walks of professional and amateur performance. And I can tell you that I've seen just as many breeders of 8 to 10 to 12 animals be as bad, if not worse, than the individual breeders that are running to 800 to 1,000 animals. And in some cases, the contrary is true. But as a matter of testimony, I'd like to make a couple brief points here. I'm a better debater than I am orator, and I would be happy to answer any questions you have. But this particular bill is a regulatory bill. existing language doesn't address an industry that is in the business to sell an animal to sell and distribute animals at a retail level in a commercial capacity. Much like the liquor industry, we have laws that prohibit the sales of liquor to minors, serving liquor after hours, et cetera. Those are all individual statutes that effectively address individual violations or incidences. But we also have a regulatory liquor industry that licenses these commercial operators. And let there be no mistake, this is a commercial operation of significant proportion. The cash that's going out on these particular breeders is very difficult to articulate in a short, brief testimony in an environment such as this. But for as many deals as Uncle Sam is making in reported sales, I would say there's two or three to one that there are not. Many of these sales are a cash puppy to cash hand delivery, and that's not getting reported. And it's simple to do the math for anyone that's in the production field. If you have individual breeding animals that are producing one or two litters a year on an average of 5 to 9 pups, and you can do that twice a year, for every breeding bitch, you can do the math, and that will tell you what type of industry these dogs are producing. Secondly, this bill does not significantly abrogate existing language. Existing language is going to augment the intent of this bill, and that is to regulate a professional commercial industry. And probably last, if not least, is that this is a consumer and public safety bill. It does as much for individuals that are out there purchasing animals, bringing them home to their families, integrating them back into society, and assuming that they come to expect a product that was properly raised and kept according to the minimum standards of the Animal Welfare Chapter. I appreciate your time, and I encourage you to support Senate File 7.
Next, we have Dr. Bill Hartman. From the Animal Board of Health, State Veterinarian Bill. State your name for the record. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for inviting us. My name is Bill Hartman. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Animal Health and the State Veterinarian. And with me, I brought Chris Petrini, who is a veterinarian with the Board of Animal Health as well. And Dr. Petrini was instrumental in putting together those fiscal notes and is a lot more familiar with both of these bills than I am. So she may help me with some questions and maybe just provide you with a brief review of the fiscal notes for your information. First of all, let me just say that both Dr. Petrini and I are veterinarians, and we share the concerns for the welfare of these animals. We certainly want to make sure that these animals are treated in a humane way, so certainly that's something that's of utmost importance. We have not been involved in dog and cat breeders in the state of Minnesota. We have had some experience, and Dr. Petrini might mention a little bit about that, with kennel inspections, and these are impound facilities that take impound animals. So we have had some experience in that area. But we really don't know the number of these dog and cat breeders that there are in the state, nor do we know of the conditions within those facilities. Just a little bit about the Board of Animal Health for any of you that aren't familiar with us. We're a small state agency. We have about 50 employees. About half of those employees are located here in St. Paul. Half of them are scattered around the state, and what I like to say is they do the real work out in the field. The board has been in existence since 1903. Our main purpose is to protect the health of our domestic animals, and our focus has been on disease control in livestock for diseases that are economically important to Minnesota and also that are of public health concern. Some of the diseases you probably heard me speak of, anthrax, tuberculosis, and now we've just recently announced that we found chronic wasting disease in an elk herd in Minnesota. So those diseases are things that are our primary focus. The last 3 years, we've really been focused on bovine tuberculosis in northwestern Minnesota. All of the resources the board has have been aimed at that, and I think we're making good progress with that disease, and that is an economically very important thing to Minnesota, as well as I might mention a disease that early in the 1900s caused disease in children and even deaths in children. So it's something that we're working on. We are fully engaged with those activities. We don't have extra personnel. As a matter of fact, I frequently am paying employees overtime to go up to northwestern Minnesota and do TB testing. and I frequently hear from people that we're having a hard time keeping up with our other programs while trying to deal with the TB. So I just want to make the point that if we're going to do anything more at the board, we're going to require additional resources. And I'll just finish by saying that this is a little bit of a departure in what the Board of Animal Health has been involved with. It's a little bit different than what we've been doing. But we work for the citizens of Minnesota, and if this is an important issue, we're certainly open to doing this and would do the best job that we possibly could to make it happen. Dr. Petrini, if you want to just say a few words about
the Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Dr. Christine Petrini. I work for the Board of Animal Health. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I was just going to mention a little bit about the fiscal notes. Senator had some questions about those. And let me just start with the fiscal note that was prepared for Senator Betzold's bill this year. This particular note, basically the costs would involve eventually three inspectors, and then someone who would organize the program. So basically four full-time people working on the program over time. Now, we don't anticipate that those costs would all come due at one time. When I tried to calculate this out, I needed to make an estimate of the number of breeders in Minnesota. It's a little bit of a guesswork, but we did look at other states that have breeding types of licensing programs in their states, so we based it on that. Also, what we do know about USDA licensed facilities right now, there's about 100 of those that the USDA does license. And then as far as the number of inspectors needed per facility, we looked at a variety of different things, how long it would take them to do the inspections, and based on our other programs that we have with kennels in the state and also our deer programs. And then also you heard Senator Betzold mention that the USDA has three inspectors for the facilities that they license right now, and there are 222 of those. So I think that having three inspectors, if there are 500 breeding facilities, would be about right. We could adjust that as need be. And then someone to oversee the program, answer the telephone, and coordinate activities. So that's basically what that is. In reference to the question about why this fiscal note was more than the one that was written last year, when I prepared the fiscal note, it was returned to me, and I was given the direction to make sure that the license fees would pay for the program. So I did my best to do that, and what that ended up happening then is that the license fees would have been had to be over $900. I was not given that direction this year, so I used a more appropriate, what I felt was a more appropriate license fee of $250 as an average, knowing that there probably would be a scaling up depending upon the number of animals. And then also that was kind of in range with what some of the surrounding states were charging for their breeding facilities. So that's why it's a difference is basically in the amount of fees. That could certainly be adjusted if you wanted the program to pay for itself. I figured this year I added actually a little bit less personnel in the bill for this year, a little bit because the bill was slightly different. And if you wanted it to pay for itself from the fees, it would cost about $700 a license, just for your information. So that's that fiscal note, and I hope that addresses the questions that you have, Senator, about the difference in those two reports. And then if we turn our attention to Senator Dill's bill, we felt like at this point we need someone to be the point person for the program, even though the amount of work that the board would need to do would be much less with this version of this bill. Still, I think we would need one person, at least initially, to get it rolling. We anticipate a lot of questions. We already get a lot of questions from the public about breeding facilities. And so I think it would be important to have someone who would be able to be coordinating with the local authorities and then helping with investigations as it is necessary to do that. We also had in both of these fiscal notes some money set aside for confiscation of animals should we get to a facility and find that there were animals that were in need of immediate care. There is in both of these bills the ability to confiscate those animals, seize them, and then put them somewhere where they can get the appropriate care while you are pending a hearing. So we put some money in both of these bills for that purpose. And then there were some miscellaneous supply fees. But that's basically it. The Senator Betzel bill would be four people to work on that program eventually over time, and the other one would be one person with some supplies and confiscation money.
Senator Hand, I'm going to hold all questions until I get through, and then we'll come back, to be fair to everybody. I wonder if both of you would, can you stick around a while, or you have, yeah, okay.
Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to.
Okay. Next witness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dr. Christine Gable. I'm a veterinarian. It says PhD after my name on the agenda. That's in public health and injury prevention, which actually worked on injuries among veterinarians caused by animals. I'm also speaking partially on behalf of Minnesota Purebred Dog Breeders. My opinions are my own, although they say in general they support this. And I'm basically speaking for the smaller breeder who is very concerned about the burden that Bill number 7 would bring to them. Certainly we are concerned with the welfare of all pets, dogs, cats, puppies, kittens. We are just as appalled as anyone else is at the awful conditions that are in some of the breeding facilities, often termed puppy mills. However, we don't see that this bill actually is going to address that situation and do what we think it will do in getting rid of that problem. My concern as a veterinarian in practice is that people have the ability to get the pet they want, whether it's a puppy or a kitten, if they want it for hunting, if they want it for obedience, if they choose to show and do things in breeding, they should have that ability to do that. And one of the best places to do that is directly from the smaller breeder, often termed the hobby breeder. The number 6 in the bill is of great concern. 6 may sound like a lot of breeding females to have on hand. However, there are many, many reasons why the small hobby breeder may have that and even significantly more intact animals on their premises. They still work with these animals. They're producing healthy pups, healthy kittens, well-socialized animals, well-bred and trained for their purpose. Some of the reasons that they may have more of these animals, if someone is breeding correctly in the traditional hobby show breeder way, they may breed a female no more than 3 or 4 times over her lifetime. And when she's 7 years old and they're done breeding her, she stays as a pet, as a family dog. Occasionally they're placed elsewhere, but very often these animals stay on hand, and many people do not at that point spay them. So they do have an additional number of dogs there. There are many people that hunt with their dogs, do mushing or other activities. They may breed occasionally, sell dogs for profit. Nothing wrong with doing that. But their main purpose is really not the profit. Again, they may have a couple of dozen intact female dogs on their premises and then come under this commercial if we have a number of 6 in a bill like this. There are also a number of breeders out there that breed in breeds that are somewhat considered rare breeds. There aren't a lot of animals. They don't have a huge genetic pool, and that's of concern to them. So they keep a number of animals. And again, they're not breeding all 20 animals every year. They may breed 3 or 4, certainly under that number 6 that was in there, but they may have 20 animals intact, and they're keeping that for their genetic diversity. The biggest thing that small hobby breeder wants to do is be very selective in what they breed. They want to breed to their breed standard. They want to breed so that their animals do the thing they were intended for, whether it be hunting, whether it be herding animals, whether it be good obedience, good pets for children, whatever it is, as companions, small cute little dogs you can carry around in your purse, whatever the purpose is for that breed. The small hobby breeders do this. And limiting this to a number of 6 is extremely small for an awful lot of these breeders. These breeders are responsible for their animals from the time they're born through the lifetime with the person they go to and for the life of the pet. Most of them are already following all the care standards. They belong to breed clubs. They follow their code of ethics for their breed clubs. And many of the breeders, including the Minnesota Purebred Group, was instrumental in getting the Puppy Lemon Law, which certainly is something that protects both the buyer and seller of animals. There's also some concern on the enforcement piece. Who would do the enforcing? And being that I hear the Board of Animal Health concerns as well, is there funding out there that this could actually happen properly? Who are actually going to register under these bills? The people that are doing a good job now are far more likely to say, oh, here's something I need to do and I'll do it. the people that maybe are still being the bad guys, the puppy mills that are causing problems. They're out there now. It sounds like we're finding some of them. But are they going to register, and are they going to come under these bills as we intend? So, again, I'm speaking in opposition to Senate File 7 specifically. On behalf of the small breeders, we feel it would be very burdensome to them and would certainly not solve the problem that we all agree is out there. But this does not seem like the way to go. Thank you.
And we have Mike Fry from Animal Arc. Welcome to committee. State your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Mike Fry. I'm the executive director of Animal Arc. Thank you, Chairman Bickerman, committee members. I have to confess, I have, you know, grown weary of the conversation around these bills at the Capitol. I've been involved at some level in the discussion here for, I think, nearly 3 years. And I have to absolutely say thank you, especially to Senator Betzold. He has done really an outstanding body of work educating this body about this very important issue. At the same time, I'm just growing frustrated year after year that we've been unable to pass something. And so this last summer, I got together with a group of people to sit back and try to figure out where we've gone wrong. And I sat back and listened to some people, and I think I learned something. One of the things that I learned by sitting back and listening to veterinarians and small hobby breeders who by all measures are doing the responsible thing is that the discussion that we've been having and the way we've been having it has been grossly offensive to some of those people. When we show horrible photographs of large-scale facilities with thousands of breeding dogs, and we talk about mass production, but then we put a number like 6 in our bill that could potentially affect small hobby breeders that are looking to preserve the DNA of rare breeds, those breeders naturally feel like we've thrown acid in their face. And the result is the massive emails that you're getting in your email inboxes. And I also realize that fundamentally the questions that we've been asking may have been a little bit wrong. And as a result, we may have been getting some of our answers a little bit wrong. People think that if we put a number higher than 6, that we're suggesting that animals in facilities smaller than that shouldn't be getting proper care. But that's not really true. The legislature has already answered the question, which animals should get proper care, and the legislature answered all of them. We have cruelty laws on the books that currently say all animals should get proper care. The question that's before the legislature is, at what point is there a real viable interest in the state to step in and verify compliance with those laws? And I would argue that the very compelling testimony by the veterinarians, I have seen firsthand, I agree with all of it, it is horrific. But I would also note that the cases they put before you, I don't think there was a case of any facility being shut down in those figures that was larger than, say, 50. But we're dealing in a state where we've got facilities that have thousands of breeding dogs. So just to put that in perspective, we're dealing with thousands of breeding dogs, and we've been arguing over these small little numbers for years when we could just get down to doing the work of cleaning up those big factory farms for dogs. And so I'm advocating sitting back, taking a deep breath, and reassessing also the fiscal model, because what happens when we increase the number, the ability to collect fees for those dogs increases, because as you increase the number of dogs in that cutoff period, you're selecting the larger breeders who are in fact mass producing dogs, and if you look at the fee structure on a per puppy or per animal basis, they can easily make up any costs that would be charged to them. So I guess I'm speaking in a way in support of Senator Betzold's Bill 7. I believe it is fundamentally very sound, and I believe with some minor changes, it could become a bill that we would have a much greater body of support for, and we could actually get this bill done this year and not have to be back here next year. And so that's what I'm advocating for.
Thank you.
Next witness. Welcome. State your name for the record.
Cindy Reaver. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We oppose SF7. We have owned our kennel for 30 years. We've been licensed for about 25. USDA has rules and regulations with unannounced inspections to make sure we follow these rules. We have a large investment in our business and hope to someday possibly pass it down to our children or even grandchildren as a family business. This bill, it would not be possible for them to continue it. We also bring a lot of revenue into the state of Minnesota. And in turn, we spend it back. We bring it in on for the airlines, dog food, building supplies, vet care and vaccines, taxes, licensing fees, and much, much more, too numerous to mention. If someone in our industry breaks the USDA laws, we have laws and we have the Board of Animal Health step in and take care of these breeders. And this is what we ask be done. We don't feel that we need more laws in place. We just need more responsible people out there doing this. When USDA writes a non-compliance on your USDA form, what a lot of people don't understand is when that compliance is fixed, you have a certain amount of time to fix it. When it is fixed and they come back again to recheck it, they do not put on there that this compliance has been fixed. It's just not wrote up again. So if it's not showing on your next report, you have been in compliance. It has been fixed. They don't state it again. We have asked them to do that. They say it's not necessary. Also, USDA does come unannounced. The only time they do announce an inspection is when you're very first licensed. Otherwise, they show up at your door whenever they want. I was just inspected not just so long ago. My inspector was there for 5 hours. They went through everything from every piece of paperwork I had to every toenail on my animals. I know that we have a lot of things to accomplish in this industry, but as a USDA breeder, I feel very strongly that we are regulated enough. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next witness, state your name for the record and welcome.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Bobby Wyrock. And I've been involved in the cat fancy, breeding and showing cats since 1970, first with Burmese cats and now with the Karat breed. I'm actively involved with two local CFA cat clubs and the production of local cat shows. I'm here today to voice my opposition to this bill, as well as to any bills requiring the licensing of small, responsible breeders as a way to combat animal cruelty. You've been inundated with gruesome pictures and stories of the horrors inflicted on animals at the overabundant puppy and kitten mills in Minnesota. My response would be, this is not reality, and I ask you to look for facts and statistics rather than at this sensationalism. I do believe that the stories you've heard are true, but that's not the whole picture. I have provided you with my own form of propaganda. You've been given two Cat Fanciers Association articles about purebred cats and an information piece about my own breed, which is very much a minority breed, as well as an invitation to attend the St. Louis City Cat Show this coming weekend as our guest. Animal cruelty is horrible, but I believe there are already adequate laws to deal with it in any form. Commercial producers of dogs or cats are under USDA regulations, and you've just heard a very good statement about what those regulations are and how they're enforced. But if neither of these avenues is being effective in controlling the mistreatment, it's because they're not being enforced rather than because they're not strong enough. I don't believe that breeder licensing laws will be any better at improving conditions. The people most impacted would be small home-based breeders. These are not businesses. They are people who are passionate about a particular breed of cat or dog. They lovingly raise kittens and puppies in their homes. They work for the betterment of the breeds. The registering and license fees are not stated in this bill, but I've heard discussion, and we've heard it today, about the possibility of fees in the neighborhood of $900. I would have to sell two kittens to offset that cost, or maybe three by the time I factor in vet bills and food bills and all of that. Cat breeding is not a money-making enterprise. It's an expensive hobby. Though a $900 fee would be a huge added financial burden to me, I don't think it would go very far in financing the inspections. And speaking of inspections, unscheduled inspections during business hours is a joke. For most of us small breeders, we don't have business hours because a lot of us are at work at our real jobs supporting this hobby. I'm sure there are some large breeders who slip through the cracks and are not USDA registered. These would be the folks that you hear about selling sick puppies from a van in a parking lot. Why would anyone believe that this type of breeder would comply with any new laws that are passed? My final point is that of standards of care. My cats live in the house with us. Kittens are raised underfoot. We have carpet. We have upholstered furniture. The care standards I have read would make this unacceptable. This is not a breeding facility. It's my home. I just happen to seriously raise cats in it. I believe it is up to me and my vet to decide what constitutes excellent care for my cats. In closing, I will say, if this is passed and signed into law, the legislation would be impractical, costly, and mostly unenforceable. More importantly, it will not improve the quality of life for cats and dogs in Minnesota, but it would lead to the extinction of small, responsible animal breeders in the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Ron Minning, Edgerton. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Ron Minning. I'm the owner of Minning Enterprises. Senator Vickerman has visited our facility. We have quite a few females that we do breed from. We've got a $1.4 million kennel. We have a grooming program. We have a dental program. We have a veterinarian that's on staff probably about 2.5 days a week. I do see a lot of these smaller kennels, and I do see larger kennels that are a mess. It's time to clean some stuff up. But as we know, our government's practically broke. How are we going to fund a lot of these things? About 10 years ago, I designed what they call Minning Plastics, where we built just about 80% of our kennel out of plastic milk jugs designed into a welding facility. I went from Los Angeles to Boston selling these kennels. Also, I introduced what they called a nebulizer for puppies and kittens with upper respiratories. Do you know who I sold most of them nebulizers to? Was humane societies. Problems with upper respiratory, kennel cough. Now, I'm not saying that we have problems, because also when you have livestock, you do have problems with them. I've got one gal that works for me. She just told me before I came up to this meeting that she is a member of the school board member in Edgerton, Minnesota. They're in the red $150,000. How are we going to support bills like this and continue on? Senator Gills has a good idea, I think, and we start slow and we move into it. We have to clean up some of this. Yes, I believe we do. But also, I have seen vet statements come across my desk of veterinarians charging people $84 for a vaccination that costs $3. I've also seen what they call laxating patellas being repaired for $1,200 to $1,800. This goes on and on and on. Every different industry also has their own problems. I believe that it's time that we do clean up some of this stuff. But right now, in the situation we are, there's no way we can pass a bill like this, hire inspectors to do what we're really supposed to do. This is 136 pages. My inspector will spend 7 hours sometimes at our facility checking over things. And yes, there are times where I'm written up on a puppy that was maybe one day before it was 8 weeks old, that is smeared over the internet without explaining what the issues are. We got to be very, very careful with entering in what we have to do. Thank you very much.
Next witness. Welcome. State your name for the record.
Hi, I'm Lisa Thostenson, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm here to voice my opposition to the bill SF7 that is before the committee today. And let me first say that I love all animals, and I certainly want to see any and all appropriate precautions taken to protect them. However, numerous parts of this bill fail to consider the rights of someone like me who would be affected by this legislation. I have been a feline fancier my entire life since I was 10 years old, and I've actively competed with CFA, which is the feline equivalent of the AKC, since I was 10. I was one of the original members of St. Louis City Cat Club in the 70s when the club began, and I've been a longstanding member of the Twin City Cat Fanciers Club, also here in the metro area. Our club support many and also put on the cat shows in the area. I'm 47 years old, so I have been in cats for 35 years. I'm going to submit, I only have like 15 copies of this picture, but this was in the St. Paul Pioneer Press, taken by one of the journalists when I was at a Civic Center cat show in about 1975. Today, my two daughters, one who's age 27 and one who's age 10, both show with me competitively across the country and help me care for our kitties. We've won regional and national awards and have produced many much-loved pets for people across the country that are not in the community. Professionally, I am a VP at a global organization, so I certainly don't breed cats for money. But I do abide by all the state statutes. Any cats that I place with a contract that protects the animal, and I attach the state statute, the 325F.791, that applies to sales of dogs and cats, and all the new owners sign this. This proposed legislation would make it okay for someone to come into my home and inspect my cats where they live, which might be my 10-year-old's bed or a kitty cuddle bed that's in my closet. It would prohibit me from having more than 6 whole animals if I did not want to subject my family to these types of intrusions and go along with the process of licensing. My cat's living areas are in my home and could likely not meet various standards that are being proposed. And I really wonder who's going to be responsible for enforcing. Small breeders like us are clearly not part of the problem in our homes. You will take away the opportunity for people to get a family-raised cat or kitten to have as a pet for their family and create almost a demand for the puppy mills and kitty mills that we're talking about here. But let me explain why this 6 cats thing is a problem for me personally. Whether or not I ever want to breed a particular cat that I'm showing, I want to show it in the championship class. It must be a whole cat. It cannot be altered, neutered, or spayed. This is where I show. And, yeah, there is a class for altered cats, but it's a different caliber, and that's just not where I want to compete. And also, I breed Persian cats. They take a lot longer to mature than some other breeds. And a typical Persian is really not going to be mature until it's 2 years old. So I have a really big window that I need to decide if I want to breed this animal in the first place. Not to mention the genetic diversity that we're trying to preserve here. So anyway, this weekend I'm going to be at the Winter Carnival showing 6 cats in the St. Louis Club show. I hope all of you will come and see the cats. One of them is a kitten, and the other ones are young adults. So of those 6, maybe one will be exceptional, but I won't know until they're fully grown. These cats are kept in show condition, which means that they are immaculately groomed and carefully fed. And I brought also pictures of my 10-year-old daughter with a litter of kittens. You can see that they're not in any danger. Currently, I have 5 adult cats that are going to shows, and their show career has yet to be determined. I also have a dog at my home that is not fixed, so that already takes me over 6. I don't show cars or guns or coins. I show my kitties, and it's a hobby. It's not a commercial entity. A licensed veterinarian comes to my home every year and inspects the areas that my cats live in. I comply with all of the conditions that are set forth by the Cat Fanciers Association, the CFA that I mentioned before. We cat fanciers and exhibitors are not the people that you're trying to regulate, yet we clearly would be severely impacted by this bill. Additionally, our mission in breeding is trying to breed out the known diseases and what we can. My cats are all DNA tested for genetic issues, and obviously appropriate vaccination protocol is adhered to as well. My daughter's and what's called a cattery has been given the CFA Cattery of Excellence status for a number of years, and that means that the licensed veterinarian that inspects us has deemed that our cattery meets the standards set forth by the CFA. I'm sure that the people that you intend to target with this legislation are not me and my family, but I hope that you will see and understand that this bill will unfairly impact my family and people in the Cat Fanciers community. It's a tight-knit group of people, and we police each other. The animal welfare chair for the CFA is a former Minnesotan and is a member of our cat club to this day. We care about the animals and tend to be very aware of the goings-on in our feline community. Please consider what this would mean to people like me and my daughters who love the animals and work toward the betterment of these lovely breeds. The Minnesota Animal Control Association already has standards of care set forth. There are already laws in place today that address the issues that I believe you're concerned with, so let's use those laws and preserve also our constitutional rights. Thank you very much.
Next witness. State your name for the record and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Andrea Piper. Sorry. I have been a Minnesota certified veterinary technician since 1993. I was hired by Minneapolis Animal Control in 1994. I am now a lead officer certified by the National Animal Control Association through their training courses. I volunteer for Hearing and Service Dogs of Minnesota, and I also enjoy the sport of showing dogs. I am here as a current member and past board member of the Minnesota Animal Control Association. As you can see, I can see all sides of these issues. Although MACA was mentioned in SF-201, we have not agreed to be part of it. MACA opposes both bills, SF number 7 and SF-201. We are concerned about the numbers of animals documented in those bills and the enforcement of those bills. The state of Minnesota has a book of animal laws. Those laws do work. We need to train both the public and the people enforcing those laws that are already in place to alleviate the abuse and neglect of the animals. MACA and our associates train in the process of investigating and obtaining warrants and prosecution of neglect and cruelty to animals. Partnerships and training is the answer. Criminals have to be located and dealt with. Punishing people who would cooperate is not the way to make this work. It never has. Our President, Barack Obama, said something like this in his speech. We need to find the things in government that work and keep them and do them right. We need to find the ones that don't and stop. We need to use the laws we have and make those laws work. As an officer at Minneapolis Animal Control, this year I served, along with my partners, almost 50 warrants. Those warrants were mostly for dangerous dogs and also maximum number, welfare issues, dog fighting, and cockfighting. I served a high number of those assisted by the Minneapolis Police Department. The cities of Minneapolis allows permits for pets of over numbers of 3. Most cities have ordinances that already are into law. Those laws complement and are usually restrictive of the state laws. I'm here to say it's best that we need to let our cities and counties use their laws and train those people to enforce their laws. That would be key for all the animal welfare and humane issues. MACA welcomes anyone who would like training. You do not have to be associated with an animal control facility. The National Animal Control Association comes here to Minnesota yearly for additional training. On our website, you can get the statute of laws that have to do with animal care and welfare so that there's no confusion about what those problems are and how to solve them. Where there is a problem, we should find it, and of most of these problems, if they're in the rural areas, those counties need to work with the towns and learn to do the enforcement together. And, of course, with the cutbacks, we all know that funding and all of that is very important. But the problem is it can be simply answered by training the people we already have. You know, the little extra dollar teaching the person who's trying to find a way to correct these problems. The USDA does have rules regarding this, and they are low-staffed. So there's nothing saying that the local sheriff's deputy isn't the person who can go out and enforce these problems. Some of the problems we find are hoarders. Hoarders have mental illness, and they're never going to volunteer to register their animals. The pet mills that have improper care are not going to register. We know we have to find them through public education and through education of our officers. I would like to work with anyone that can see all sides of these issues. Pets are the reason some people get up in the morning. Working with hearing and service dogs is the way some people can only get up in the morning. We do not want to take away a person's constitutional right to have animals unless they've done something wrong. We do not need to go after reputable breeders, and most of all, people that are more careful. Wait, hang on a second. I'm sorry. I'm just nervous. Most of these people are more careful about the selection of their animals and in their breeding programs than they were when they selected their spouse. Anyway, thank you.
Okay.
Next question.
Is she supporting it or?
I'm opposing.
Opposing.
I oppose both.
Chair.
Hi. I'm Pat Cunningham from Brainerd, Minnesota. I'm here to speak in opposition to SF7. I don't have a fancy title. I'm not a vet. I'm a hobby breeder and purebred dog enthusiast. Some issues that have come up as I've been reviewing the bills and looking at them, it's pretty clear that nobody is in favor of puppy mills. Nobody wants bad dogs. But the question that keeps coming up is the number of intact females. I'll freely admit I have 4 intact females, and that number did come up today. I haven't had a litter in 4 years. I don't know what to tell you. Maybe I'm not good at it, but anyways. There seems to be a huge gap in the fees that are going to apply to the breeders. As the numbers come up, we've heard numbers from 900 down to 250. How are these numbers going to be supported? If we pass legislation that has a $250 fee to it and the actual cost is $900, this state has no money right now. And, in fact, a lot of places don't have any money. Is it going to become an unfunded mandate to the counties and cities? Right now, do they have the personnel to deal with it? Who are going to be the personnel that come out and look at this? Are they going to be trained? Is it going to be somebody that's post-certified? Or is it just going to be someone that's elected to fill the position? Is it going to be volunteers like it is in other states where it's become more along the lines of snitch on your neighbor and have other people come out and look at it? That I find troublesome. Is passing this legislation going to get rid of puppy mills? Absolutely not. These people are going to go underground. You will not. You will have to root them out. It's just that way. Law enforcement needs to take an active look at these people and take care of the problems. I find warrantless searches of property to be an issue. And it appears in this legislation that people are going to enter my property. Whether I'm registered or part of the program, there's no definitions as you go through. It also calls for a background check on my employees. I have no employees. I am the kennel help. But if I hire someone, it indicates that I'm going to make sure that they haven't been convicted of a crime somewhere. I have issue with that.
She's got for a number.
Enforcing the laws that are on the books. Right now, we have a law from 1994 that was in agreement with the other people that were there. Minnesota Purebred was on board, the Department of Agriculture, and several other groups. The legislation is there. Why are we going somewhere else? Why don't we take the consensus route that was there and enforce it? It seems to be a simple solution to that. The last thing I want to talk about is what is the real problem with the dogs that are being rescued in this state? Are they being produced by these mass breeders? I am thinking that the majority, there are some rotten apples in every barrel, but the majority of the people out there that are causing the problem are your one and two dog owners that breed their golden retriever every time it comes into season, that they breed the designer dog. They have a sign at the end of their driveway that every time you go by says XYZ for sale. These are the people that are causing the problems in the state, and it is not the responsible multi-dog owners for the most part. Most of them are dedicated to genetic testing. Most of them are trying to produce the best purebred dogs they can, and it is only the problems that are out there. So don't condemn everyone in the legislation that fits into these little niches that may be the good people that were out there. We've heard from a lot of the good people, and we have seen the videos of the extreme. Ignore the extreme and look after the people that, you know, should be looked after. Thank you.
Welcome. State your name for the record.
My name is Jack Swenson. Aren't you glad to see me here? According to the gent, I'm the last one. I'm not going to give you the speech that I had written out, and my wife is already kind of crawling under the chair. I'm just going to talk to you from my heart. Dog breeders, we've held a USDA license for between 40 and 45 years. We take care of our animals not because USDA comes in and inspects. We take care of our animals because it's the bottom line. If you don't feed the cow, you don't get any milk, and if you don't get any milk, you haven't got anything to sell. And that's the same way with breeding dogs. If you don't breed a good dog, a healthy dog, you can't sell the thing. In fact, you can't even give the thing away. And so unless we breed a good healthy puppy, our banker calls us, says, why haven't you put some money in your account? And that's why we do it. If we do have problems, we take care of it. Not because there's a Minnesota lemon law, not because we're afraid we're going to get sued. We take care of it because we follow the golden rule. Pure and simple. And I oppose these bills, probably both of them, and I shouldn't say that to Senator Dill because he has really worked with Minnesota Pet Breeders Association and worked on this bill, and by far better than seven, but I'm just kind of tired of you guys regulating me, to tell the truth. You know what I mean? Every time you guys and the national Senate gets together, it costs me more money or I have to do more work, more paperwork. Sorry about that, guys, but that's, I told you I was going to talk to you from my heart. And inspections, we have USDA inspections, and unless you've been through a USDA inspection, you don't know what they're all about. And they'll write you up for most anything. One time they wrote me up for not mowing the lawn. I'm not joking, guys. And I said, now wait a minute, what does this have to do with my raising dogs? Well, the guy says, I have to write you up on something. And so that's what we did, you know. And, okay, we'll live with it. I finally, a couple of weeks later, I did mow the lawn. But then you say I can only have 50 dogs. Well, basically what you're saying is I can only make so much money. And I'm not opposed to that, but at the same time, if you do that to me, then you go tell Denny Hecker that he can only have 25 cars on his lot, or Super Value that they can only have 30 gallons of milk at one time. Now, if I'm a good, responsible builder, just say that I just won the lottery and I come to the state with a couple $1 million and I'm going to raise dogs and I want to make it look good, I want to have about 500 dogs, and so I hire a couple of veterinarians to work full-time. I have a top-of-the-line facility and so forth. Don't you suppose maybe I'm going to take better care of my dogs than the guy with 20? Because he has to work in town to help pay for the kennel, and when he comes home, he's just too wore out. And I know, I'm sorry, guys, I told you I was going to keep this short, and I'm the last one. And you probably say, now what in the world is that old duffer up here complaining about these bills for? The reason that my wife and I raise dogs, and this is the only reason, I said we've been in it for 45 years, we should be retired laying on a beach in Mexico. But I tell you guys, we've got an autistic son. We take him to Minneapolis twice a week, once to Crosby. That's 1,000 miles a week. We insurance does not cover for the travel. Insurance does not cover for the therapy. Insurance does not cover for the medication. And because we're rich from raising dogs, we can't get on a government program. That's why we raise dogs. And maybe sometime that son can make a few bucks on his own raising dogs. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. That's all the testimony that I have. And I'm going to ask Senator Dill and Senator Betzel to go back on that end. And members, you can start asking questions once they get back there. And I'll make a list. And the first on the list is going to be Senator Scoy.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I just had a question. I have questions of one of the testifiers. Would it be possible to bring them back up to the table? Mr. Streff?
It's hard to hear, Senator. Mr. Streff.
I had a question for one of the testifiers. I was wondering if Mr. Streff could come back up to the table. And, Mr. Chair, Mr. Streff, in your testimony, you talked about the quality of care that these raisers or breeders give to their animals, and you said it didn't have anything to do with the size of the facility. You know, can you just carry through a little more on that so I can understand, you know, you see bad ones when they're small and bad ones when they're good, big, and good ones when they're big and good ones when they're small. And so their size isn't an issue?
That's correct, Senator, or Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy. There is a differential and a departure between a large-scale breeder and a small-scale breeder, and I'll try and give it to an example, being an old dairy farmer from Stearns County. You can have a smaller operation with milking 20 cattle and have a much more problematic facility than a facility that's raising 1,000 cattle, milking three times a day with on-staff full-time consulting veterinarians and all the support labor that goes with that particular operation. It's got stainless steel, much like the previous testifier stated, that if he had the million-dollar facility, he could run an operation that big. So I've seen breeders of 100 breeding bitches that are in much better facilitary condition than it is the guy with 15 breeding bitches in the backwoods breeding out of a chicken coop. So there is a differential there, and that is what we're trying to focus this particular bill. Not put them out of business, but regulate them and make them come into compliance with existing language.
Well, to Senator Betzel, then, Section 3, subsection A, number 8, this 50 animal thing, you know, what's the purpose of the 50 animals? As this gentleman has just testified, that size isn't really the issue. Why do you?
Mr. Chair.
Well, I was asking Senator Betzel. You can answer.
I'll let If you don't mind, Mr. Chair, I'll have Mr. Struth, you know, respond, and I'll have my thoughts on this.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, the reason we're trying to cap this is from an industrial or an industry perspective, in that obviously humane societies, animal control departments, both private and those that are quasi-government subsidies, will tell you that the budgetary expense spent on animals that are unwanted, dropped off, strays, et cetera, that have to be cared for, euthanized, disposed of, are all at significant cost. Many other states have put caps on the pet and companion animal production simply because of the pure numbers that are being cranked out there right now that end up at our facility. The Animal Humane Society in Golden Valley, the largest humane society in the upper Midwest, takes in nearly 40,000 animals every single year. And that comes in from the general public across all boards from all 50 states for all various reasons. And as a result of that, those animals have to be either put up for adoption, euthanized, fostered out, or dealt with appropriately within whatever policies are set there. So we have more animals than we have homes. So at some point in time, we're trying to introduce language here that's going to try and pragmatically address that issue as well as regulate the breeding issue.
And to add to that, Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, obviously, the bigger the facility, if it has problems, they are multiplied greatly. As I say, the language that you have before you here would allow the current large facilities to continue that. It would just prevent other facilities from growing that large because, again, you know, if you're cranking out thousands of animals that have nowhere to go, that's probably not in the public's interest as well either.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Betzel, that's not the way I read this, that they would be able to continue, because line 5.2.3 and 2.4 says they may add or replace animals only if the number of animals possessed for a purpose of breeding is less than 51. So what that tells me is that they're going to have to get below 51. So that's the way that reads to me, and if I'm reading it wrong, that would... But as long as Wiley's reading that, I just, members, we've went through a lot of difficult stuff with animals and feedlot issues, and I've always tried to avoid this fight between the big and the little. And so we should, you know, regulate them if they need to be regulated, and, you know, if there's too many animals, I would assume these breeders will go out of business and they won't be able to sell them or something. But I'm really uncomfortable with this putting this cap on there, 50 animals. I don't know that there's much rationale for it other than it's a number.
Senator Ropes.
And Senator Betzel, did I read that correctly, that they're restricted to under 51?
Well, it says two things, Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy. They may continue to maintain the inventory. Again, at some point, to start drawing down them because, again, you know, the large-scale animal producers really may not serve the public interest in just cranking out animals that really have no place to go, as Mr. Struff indicated.
So they would be able, Mr. Chair and Senator Betzel, they would maintain their inventory, but they wouldn't be able to replace any animals until they got their inventory under 50. Well, if they're, got the investment in the facilities to raise more, you know, and they have to go down to 50, it's going to, you know, probably be a financial difficulty for them, I would think.
Senator Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an amendment to pass out. And while that's being passed out, I first want to say that I admire both Senator Dill and Senator Betzel for bringing this topic to the table, although it's difficult. But it seems people on all sides care about what happens to dogs and cats. And what I'm proposing here is a compromise that maybe will fit partially between the two senators and their proposals. This bill is going to be introduced in the House with the amendment by Representative Val Junk, who is the chair of Ag over there. And this bill was written using a consensus-building model between veterinarians and breeders and breed clubs and animal welfare associations, And I bring the same concerns to the table as we've heard testifiers talking about today. Back in my district, I have toured several small breeder operations, and I have the same concerns that many of these people expressed, that in an effort to deal with some of the big problems that are out there, the small breeders and small producers are going to get caught up in regulations that are just too expensive and would essentially put them out of business. I was to the home of a woman who hand-raises Welsh corgis, and she said, according to this bill, that she would have to put her hand-raised dogs, who pretty much live in beds, and I heard some testimony to that effect today, just in a loving home, hand-raised about six at a time, she'd have to put them outdoors. And so, I have a lot of concerns for the small breeders that have been expressing these same concerns today. So one of the things I'd like to recommend is that on page 1, line 13, we delete the number 6 that we've been talking about in terms of the breeding animals to 40. Now, Senator Dill, I believe, had some very large numbers, and Senator Betzold has some very small numbers. So if we go to 40, my understanding is that we're going to be able to allow a lot of these small-town home-style breeders to continue to function as they have been. And we really need to target the large-scale operations because, as Senator Dill has pointed out, we're really stressed for money right now. And if we're going to have a starting point to begin, let's target some of the large-scale commercial breeders that are doing this for big business. And if we get to home breeders at some point, we can have that discussion. But we need, in my mind, if we need a place to start, let's start with the large-scale operations where we might be, you know, having a couple thousand animals. So this bill pays for itself. There's also a mechanism in here where application fees will cover the cost of inspecting and administering the inspection process. There's also a clause here on Section 10 where we open it up to donations. If people want to donate some money to the Animal Board of Health to help develop the licensing paperwork and some of the process, that we would take public money and donations and line item it into a specific fund that would help offset some of the costs. I think people all across the board want to see licensing and regulation be successful and not catch some of the small breeders in the same net that we're casting, you know, trying to catch the bad players. This bill creates no new standards, but just rigorously calls for enforcing laws already on the books. I think we heard a lot of testimony to that today as well. So I put it out there as a compromise bill between both of these bills that have required a lot of work, and as a way, as we've heard in testimony from many people, to move forward, give us a little bit of foothold on the problem that the state's dealing with. And and then I just wanted to make a point as well, because I'm really concerned about the impact on local government units if it's carried out by the local sheriff, you know, going out to breeders if they have to impound a whole bunch of animals out there. I represent a lot of small rural hometowns. They don't have the resources to take in 500 animals and house them while they figure out what to do with things. So I think we need this program where we would establish some grants for if the local sheriff or local inspectors go out and have a cost incurred to either the county or the cities or whoever the enforcement official is, that they're able to draw some reimbursement back from the Animal Board of Health through these grants. So put that before you.
Senator Betzel, this amendment is to your bill, but Senator right. Dill, you're kind of there on this bill, too. So I want to hear what you two think about it.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and thank you, Senator Erickson Ropes. If I could offer a couple of thoughts here and overall and then address specifically the amendment. Virtually everybody who heard testify said that there's a problem. Now, I would suggest that if in any other legislative committee, any other time, if you have every single person coming before you and saying, there is a problem, I think the legislature probably has a responsibility to try to do something to resolve that problem. Walking away is not an option for a legislature when everybody says, there is a problem. And you heard lots of people saying, there's a problem. Now, there's disagreement as to the best way to approach it, but there is a problem. And so we have a duty here. Now, you cannot, I don't know all the people in this particular room. I'm assuming that most, if not every breeder in this room is a good, responsible breeder. And the irresponsible ones, the bad breeders, are not here. But our charge is to figure out how do you get to those bad breeders and either make them responsible or put them out of business. And I think everybody would share that goal. Now, just overall, yes, the economy is bad. Senator Dill, you know, talked about putting a burden on the breeders. I would suggest that the bad breeders, if the economy is bad, where are they going to cut their costs? They're going to make a bad situation even worse. They're not going to invest their money in the animals that they're charged to care for. Yes, the state budget has problems. Of course, this bill does pay for itself. I wish I could go to the general fund and find the money that's going to be able to pay for the necessary inspections, the enforcement that we need to be. As I say, if you don't have any kind of standards, if you don't have any enforcement, you have nothing. But that is not the situation we live in. In fact, the bill I even proposed even a year ago paid for itself. So we're not seeking general fund money to do this. The people who testified in opposition to my bill, as well as Senator Dill's, didn't really identify what it is within the bill that they oppose. There was a lot of discussion about the numbers, but they didn't point to any particular part of the bill to say, this part is unreasonable. At least for most of the testimony we heard, they focused on the numbers. We heard over and over about, you know, the standards and so forth, and they talked about the USDA standards. This bill simply adopts the USDA standards. Now, keep in mind, not every breeder is USDA licensed. They don't have to get USDA licenses. They can just sell puppies off the in ads off the internet. They can sell them right now. There are the standards simply do not apply at all. What this bill does is make them at least apply, which then ties the USDA standards into them. Now, we heard they're going to go underground. They're not going to comply. Well, it's a misdemeanor. There's a criminal penalty. And if a pet store sells an animal from a breeder who's not licensed, that's a misdemeanor. I think some of these pet stores and some of these breeders, obviously, if they don't register, they're going to get caught at some point. There's going to be criminal charges filed against them. And we have methods of enforcement right in the bill. Now, to get to the particular question, the one that seemed to be focused on was the number. Now, I do not support the portion of the A2 amendment that says let's go from 6 to 40. Bad breeders are big and small. As I said, the large breeders can compound the problems, but if you've got a small breeder that has, you know, 35 animals and they're mistreating them and they're doing bad breeding practices, this bill, you know, ignores them. It just lets the world go on. I think that that is not the direction we ought to go in. Again, there's a problem. Everybody acknowledges a problem. Going from 6 to 40 certainly does not resolve that. There are parts of the amendment that I think are workable. For instance, if the Board of Animal Health is collecting the money, and if for whatever reason they feel that they cannot send their inspectors out all over the state, then perhaps the local governments ought to be able to apply for grants. The money's there at the Board of Animal Health, so maybe the local governments ought to be reimbursed by the funds that are collected here. And the donations, accepting donations, I think that's a good idea, too. If somebody wants to contribute towards making this work and wants to provide private funds, obviously that would be a good idea as well, too. But the first part of the amendment, going from 6 to 40, is something that, as I say, I think is just not workable. Yes, it's going to target, the bad large breeders. It certainly does nothing towards the bad small breeders.
Senator Deal.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members, I looked over the amendment quite carefully, and it kind of leads me back to what Senator Scully was talking about on the paragraph that limits the size of these facilities to 50 animals. And if Senator Erickson-Ropes has her way and we raise the threshold up to 40 animals before we start to regulate, then we'll be regulating between 40 and 50. And Senator Scully, I recognize what you were saying there. It is confusing the way that paragraph is worded. It sounds like the bigger facilities are grandfathered in. It sounds that way until you get to the last line and a half. And then it sounds like even if you're grandfathered in, you still have to get your system screwed down to 50 animals, which doesn't work if you've got a million-dollar investment on a larger facility. It's just not appropriate. So based on the words I see in Senator Betzel's bill and Senator Erickson-Ropes' amendment, it looks like we, in the long run, will be only regulating between 40 and 50 animals in the long run after we get down to that size. Now, the idea of providing grants to local units of government, that's wonderful if we've got money to do it. And I like this idea of donations. That's a very good idea because, as I understand it, Oprah Winfrey has now donated $24 million to PETA, and there's all kinds of other donations going into humane societies. And as long as they've got so darn much money, why don't they just donate some of that to the Board of Animal Health and let Dr. Hartman have a little easier time with this?
Can we make that amendment? Senator Engelbrecht. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like Dr. Gable to come forward, please, if she would. Just a question for her. And before that, Mr. Chair and Senator Betzel, the socialization part of the bill I have an issue with, not an issue with, but a question. What do you see? That'd be section 3.
Mr. Chair? Senator Engelbretson.
I'm sorry. Senator Engelbretson, I think we're on.
Are you on the amendment?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
On the floor right now, Senator Ropes' amendment.
I guess
what
question.
Any
question is
Senator Chaudhry?
Thanks.
Member, we're on her amendment now.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Senator Erickson-Ropes, I'm still trying to figure out the question about why we should be devoting our efforts to creating any type of licensure and inspection versus enforcing current law. You know, we heard testimony from people for and against this bill that you have large breeders that are very good, you have small breeders that are very good, you have small breeders that are very bad, you have large breeders that are very bad. So I thought it was the most compelling testimony was from Mr. Fry from Animal Ark, who said that we need to protect all animals and that he was concerned that establishing a threshold tells the public and law enforcement that there is a threshold by which we gauge bad animal treatment. And I think there's been this underlying current that if it's large, it must be bad. And you know what? Maybe that is the case. Maybe it's not, but that hasn't been shown to me today. And I've yet to see that. I have yet to see here from one witness how many bad actors are out there. How many puppy mills people were investigated, charge closed down in 2008, for example, or the previous years, compared to how many facilities we had. I thought I heard Dr. Petrini throw out the 500 number for breeding facilities, but I don't know how many of those are large, 40, 50 versus 6. So I'm still waiting for the information on the idea that this is a good approach.
It's the video.
And I'm trying to figure out how this is going to help get the small bad breeders. And I keep going back in my mind to, you know, all these pictures that we saw about these bad puppy mills and wondering how these people were caught. And isn't it true that they were? Weren't they caught and brought to mm-hmm. justice? And if not, if they got off on a, you know, a probation or something, isn't that where the problem is? I mean, it's my understanding, and I can be corrected by counsel, that some of our laws against animals, animal cruelty, are stronger than all the cruelty laws we have against humans. And that's fine. We ought to have strong anti-animal cruelty laws. I've supported the felony provisions. I've supported the exotic animal bans. But I just, I don't understand why we can't get at these people who are already breaking the law. You know, if someone's breaking the law in my neighborhood, I call the cops. Or I just write a letter. Someone's lawn is too long. I take a picture and send it to the city, or I send it to the county attorney. If the law's been broken, the county attorney has to prosecute. It's their mandate. So I just get confused on the approach here. And the question was, you know, by Mr. Fry, are we asking the right questions here? I think that's where the crux is. And I'm just looking for information here, because I'm trying to figure out how these large puppy mill bad actors who need to be condemned, put out of business, put in jail, are solved by a fee on the good breeders. And not to mention the question of why the good people have to pay to prosecute the bad ones. So I still have a lot of questions swirling in my mind about not just thresholds, but whether this is the right approach or not. I mean, we all agreed that this is a problem. Everyone agreed that bad puppy mills are a problem. But what I heard from a lot of the witnesses was, I am not the problem, so don't put me out of business, whether I'm 40 or 6. So, you know, just the last thing, Mr. Chair, one of the final comments from the Humane Society agent, Mr. Streff, was that we have an opportunity in this bill to address the pet population. And I'm wondering if that's not the most insightful portion of this discussion about what the bill is really getting at. And there may be perfectly good reasons and philosophies to reduce pet breeding. People believe that we have too many animals, and that's their right to have those opinions. But that hasn't been put forth here. It's all been about bad actors, and then we're turning around and trying to reduce pet populations, which I find insincere.
Senator Shadwell, we need to move along because that clock is moving.
Sorry, I just...
And I don't like to cut you off, but...
Sorry, Mr. I'm just speaking from the heart, too.
I know you are.
So... I don't know how I want to vote on your bill. I mean, it's certainly not as onerous as six, but it just I just don't understand how we're actually solving the problem.
Okay, Senator Betzel.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just briefly, again, how others perceive the bill is one thing. I perceive this as a consumer bill, protecting consumers from buying diseased and sick animals. That's what it's all about. There aren't any laws right now to say it's illegal to be a bad breeder. There is nothing. We don't really have any laws in the books about breeders per se. We do have anti-cruelty laws, and in fact, I was the author of that. And when I brought the bill before the Senate Crime Prevention Committee, they specifically wanted to make sure that we were not having laws on anti-cruelty to animals that are greater than cruelty to humans. And they made very sure that we were not going there. The problem that we've got is the fact that, again, the good breeders are already in compliance with the bill as you have it before you. So the bad breeders don't want people to come onto their properties. They don't want people to see what's going on there. At some point, in order to root out the bad breeders, somebody has to see what they're doing and figure out if they're even in compliance with the laws that are on the books. You can't enforce them if nobody sees them. So that's what we're trying to do here.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, on the amendment, you're...
No, not on the amendment.
Senator Skoy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to what the Animal Ark guy testified, I'm looking at his sheet here, and he's talking about regulating 40 on this Animal Ark fact sheet. Now, I heard him say that he thought there was some number larger than 6. I didn't realize it was to 40. I personally think 40 is larger than... more animals, and as Senator Dill has pointed out, we'd only be regulating between 40 and 50 unless I'm successful with my next amendment to delete this section. But I would move an amendment to the Erickson Ropes amendment that where it says 40, we substitute 20.
Senator Vickerman, thank you very much. And perhaps while we're discussing a little bit of this, we could call on Mike Fry to come back up to the table to clarify some of his statements that Senator Chaudhry and Senator Skoy had questions on. But Senator Chaudhry, I appreciate all of your questions and comments, and I think it really brings to the table the fact that there are so many of us struggling from different perspectives on how to get our handle around this. One of the points you asked is, why should the good breeders pay for bad breeders? And I think that precedent just abounds around the Capitol. There are fees attached to dry cleaning. Every time we pick up a dry cleaning, you put a quarter in the Superfund pot that goes to clean up when dry cleaning places have leaks or whatever. And this committee actually last week heard from the ag chemical folks, and we talked about the front-end fees that they pay on agricultural chemicals that go to clean up abandoned sites or bad spills or, you know, whatever. So that precedent happens all the time. In terms of dealing with the 40, it's my concern is that we're capturing a lot of really good small-scale breeders, and it's true that I'm sure somewhere out there are small-scale breeders that do have bad operations. But, again, it's the place to start, the context that we're looking at, because right now we have a very tiny number and a very large number. It gives us a place to start without, you know, tripping up all of these small businesses and doing a lot of damage to a lot of business people across the state that are doing really good things. Now, there might be some bad apples in that, you know, 20 to 40 number, you know, and hopefully we'll get to them because this bill really does stress as well enforcing the laws on the books. So it gives us a place to start as a compromise, Senator.
Mr. Chair.
Quickly.
Thank you, Senator Vickerman. I think there's three points that I would like to deal with. One is the number 40. One is what happens with the smaller breeders. I heard that question in there. And then also this other number 50. I'll confess, when I put the number 40 in my document, I never in my wildest dreams that 50 cap would survive. I mean, I would support it, but I just can't imagine that passing. So what we're proposing is 40 and above. We currently have animal control authority in every single community throughout Minnesota. Those organizations are perfectly capable of dealing with one dog up to, you know, 40 dogs. They do it all the time. That's why, frankly, when you heard the veterinarians testifying and looking at those cases that were closed, those facilities were all in that size range. You did not see facilities in the 200 to 1,000 range. And I'll tell you why. Because they just can't do it. They can't get on the property physically, and without having probable cause, the sheriff can't get in. And if they do get in, they walk into a facility with 2,000 dogs, and they say, I can't do this. I was just recently talking to an animal control professional and I asked him flat out. He was working in the city of St. Paul, so this bill wouldn't really affect him. But he has a large budget, a decent staff, and I said, what would you do if you walked into a facility and you found 1,000 dogs and there was large-scale abuse? And he paused very quietly and said, you know, I would have to walk away because closing that facility would take more than my entire annual budget. And that's the very real situation you're dealing with, and that's why I believe it's critical we focus resources on the large-scale facilities. Nobody's saying that 40 and above are larger. What I said was that at some point the facility becomes so large that the local animal control folks can't deal with it anymore, and the state has an interest in verifying compliance. We're not saying they're bad. We're just saying we have an interest in verifying compliance. I hope that answers your question. Thanks again, Senator Vickerman.
On the SCOI amendment to change it from 40 to 20, that was...
Mr. Chair,
before us right now.
The only reason that I picked 20 is because I heard him say that they get a couple litters a year, and they go between 5 and 9 animals per litter. So I did 2 times 20. I came up with 40 times 5. I said 200. That's quite a few pups. So I don't know. It's just a number, like everybody else is figuring numbers, but that's where it came from.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Scobray. The concern I have with 20 is I also have some sledders down in southeastern Minnesota, and at any given time they're going to have more than 20 dogs there. Now maybe some of the small home breeders only have 6 or 8 corgis, like that example I gave, but then I have a young couple who have huskies that they raise, and they have 2 lines to pull 2 sleds, and that's going to capture them again in all the problems that the very small breeders have. So 40 is really a pretty significant operation, and, you know, so that's, I think, why we're looking at the 40 and above. I'm really trying to protect small businessmen across the state.
And Senator Langston?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think we're ready to vote now, and I realize you, the chair, probably would like to get rid of this one, but I really think, I mean, we've heard it all now. I think maybe we better get behind the scenes and try to work this out because we're already over here, and I kind of think we need to work it out behind the scenes.
Well, Senator Langston, let's vote on...
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw my amendment.
Now we have Senator Robes' amendment.
Well, I guess I would put that to the committee, too. We still have both bills to be dealing with and discussing. If it's the committee's pleasure to set this aside, I'd withdraw my amendment, and we could continue conversation and put amendments back on the table at another point.
Mr. Chair and Senator Erickson Ropes, if I can just reiterate, I think lines 1.8 to 1.13 and 1.16 to 1.22 have merit. I certainly do not support the earlier parts, but I think you do have something there, so that's something we probably should be talking about.
Okay, Senator, excuse me, Mr. Chair. Senator Betzold, you'll consider 1.8 to what again?
1.13.
Okay.
Now, the next 2 lines actually were changed by my amendment, so I don't think that that's really appropriate. But 1.16 to 1.22, the donation part, again, I think those 2 parts of your amendment have merit.
And you'll accept them as a friendly amendment?
I don't really have any problems with that, Mr. Chair and Senator Erickson Ropes.
So, Senator Vickerman, I would withdraw my first amendment. the A2 amendment and just simply put forward the 1.8 through 1.13 segment as well as the 1.16 through 1.22 segment.
Does everybody understand the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Yeah. We're going to take it.
It's adopted. Mr. Scott.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think there's some validity to what Senator Langs has said about working this out, because I do have a number of other issues that I think we ought to be considering. Certainly, if we're going to carry on, I'm going to move to strike on page 5 this number 8. But I also think that at some point, if these breeders are being inspected by USDA and I don't have Senator Dill's little blue book of regulations, but that 140 pages or whatever, they probably ought to be exempt from the state inspection. There's no sense duplicating that. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense to use those resources to redo at the state level what somebody's already doing at the federal level. And I think perhaps a little time on this might not be the end of the world.
Well members, if the bill passes, it goes to state and local government. It has to go there to make it better. I bet it'll end up in judiciary from there.
Mr. Chair, judiciary is supposed to see it.
So,
Mr. Chair, what bill are you talking about? We got two of them.
No, we got one bill. Betzel.
He's not voting on Dill's bill.
Am I right? Yeah, and the Betzel bill. And, you know, it puts a lot of us in a kind of an awkward position, but Donna's worked so hard over the last 20 years, I think, trying to get something. I kind of, well, you got to do what you want to do, but remember, this still has to go to another committee. And Senator Langseth, you're wiser than I am, but tell you what, my email and my phone is going to ring 500 more times than it did before. So, and that's kind of a poor excuse, but I agree with you. I want to do something. I would like to move it out of here myself. But if I don't move, it don't move.
Well, one more time. Mr. Chair, then I would move on page 5, strike section 3, subdivision A, number 8, lines 520 through 524.
Mr. Chair, Sir Skoy, would you be amenable to suggesting on page 5, line 23, put a period after the first animals and then striking the rest of line 523 and 524? That allows the large breeders to continue on with their current inventory. It does prevent future people from building up to over 50. So it would not hurt the current large ones if you just put a period after the first animals on page line 50, line right point 523.
Well, Senator Betzel, you know, this bill is, from what I'm hearing, has a long ways to go, and you're going to be in a conference committee. Maybe somebody will bring that issue back, but I'd like to leave my motion as it is.
Any further discussion? We're on the Betzel bill. You withdrew your... Okay.
We voted on my two.
Yep. On the Betzel bill.
Well, I have an amendment.
No. Oh, you had one. Okay.
Yep, strike number 8.
Senator Skoy, what is your bill? Again, real quickly.
Mr. Chairman, I'm moving to delete on page 5, lines 20 through 24.
Everybody understand it. All those in favor of the Skoy amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. No.
Mr. Chair, Skoy. I'm sorry, but I have another amendment, and I don't have the language for this drafted up, but maybe Mr. Knopf can help me. It appears to me that after the testimony we heard that a number of breeders are doing the USDA permitting. And there's really no reason to have the Board of Animal Health do what's already being done by USDA. So I would propose that if they're doing the USDA inspection, that they're exempt from this stuff because they're already being taken care of under another jurisdiction. And I don't have the language for that, but I would propose that we move that.
Alf, can you briefly explain it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, I guess there's two issues. One is whether or not you're going to require licensure or just want to eliminate the inspection component of it. Because it's whether you want to completely eliminate them from the bill or do you want to just say that they don't have to be inspected. It does have that shall inspect each license, because under one condition you're going to make the USDA requirements part of state law but not require an inspection. But on the other situation, you're just going to let USDA handle them and you're not going to put them under state law as far as a breeder.
Well, Mr. Knopf and probably to Senator Betzel, I don't know what the numbers are, and I'd probably want to talk to the Board of Animal Health about this. If you exempt them from the bill, they're not going to be paying any of the fees to help support the rest of it. But on the other hand, you're also not going to be having them be inspected by these people very likely. So I haven't thought that through well enough to know exactly where I'd like to go there.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scoy, if I can comment. Again, you currently have USDA licensed breeders that don't follow compliance and would be regarded as the bad breeders. I mean, that was part of the information that was presented to us. If we had no bill, that's the current law right now. People who have USDA licensed and are not in compliance, there's no penalty, there's no enforcement, there's no anything. And then that doesn't even get to the issue of the fact that there's a whole bunch of breeders that don't even have the USDA licenses. So what this simply does, the bill does, is it adopts, accepts the current USDA licenses, but does what USDA right now cannot do because they don't have the resources and people to do it, is that we step into the state to do it. In a perfect world, the USDA would have the resources and manpower to enforce their own regulations and make them work. And they don't. And that's one of the reasons why we have the problems we have.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, we heard testimony today that the USDA does do a very good job inspecting. They're just spending a lot of time on site. And my impression is that those facilities are generally doing quite well in terms of following the complicated rules in this 136-page document here. In the bill that I presented to you, I have exempted the USDA-inspected dog production facilities in this state, so that's, and Senator or Mr. Knopf prepared that language for me, so I'm sure he can do it for you as well if you want to apply that to Senator Betzel's bill.
Senator Coring?
I was just going to say that, and tell me if I'm incorrect, but this bill does have to come back to this committee because it is a budget division, is that correct? So the bill will be back here, members, so if you do want to do some other changes, we can do it at that time, too. So just a suggestion.
Well, yeah, Mr. Chair, technically, yeah, the route that it would go, ultimately, it has to go to the Finance Committee.
Yep.
And this is a policy committee, but it's also part of a budget division. So if at the time it gets to the Finance Committee, you needed to look at the fiscal aspects of the bill again, that would just take a referral from the Finance Committee Chair to Senator Vickerman to have it. But then again, the issue would be mainly the fiscal impact. But yes, that the bill ultimately would go to the Finance Committee.
Well, members, we've got 2 minutes to make a mind up. Do you want to still pursue that, Senator?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll either vote against the bill or we'll fix it so that we can be comfortable moving it on. But I'm not going to pass it out of here hoping somebody else fixes it up.
Right.
Senator Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding, though, that the USDA requirements and the state requirements are two different things. And didn't you say, Senator Betzel, that we have a problem with enforcement of the USDA piece? I mean, it seems like we have all sorts of rules circulating around, but really no enforcement mechanism. So I'm a little leery of stepping away from Senator Betzel's language in the bill, because it seems like we're undoing the oversight that we're talking about that we need.
Mr. Chair and Senator Erickson Ropes, again, for people who do not have any USD licenses, there is zero laws on breeding, protection, anything other than the animal cruelty laws. Otherwise, there is absolutely nothing on the books. even for the USDA licensed ones, in many instances, I think you can argue that it's more registration than anything else. What's the remedy? Yanking the USDA license so they can operate without a license? I mean, this is all that we can do is to enforce the USDA regulations, and that's more than is happening right now.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to make a point on that as well. In 22 years of working in the industry, and I've handled hundreds, if not thousands, of these kind of cases and breeder cases, I have yet to come across a case that's so egregious that the USDA felt it needed to intervene. And most of these cases up here represent that, and many others much worse. And there is no intervention. The USDA is largely a registration and regulatory agency of which they have no facilities, no personnel, no transport, no anything. So they're not going to tackle that problem. So it has to be relegated down to local unit of government that is centralized and standardized, and that appears to be the Board of Animal Health.
Now, Senator Dale.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I would like to respectfully disagree with Senator Betzel when he says there's nothing in state law regarding animal care, because in chapters 343 and 346, I believe there is a section in there about watering and food and shelter and so forth. There's a state doghouse law. There's a bunch of things in there that identify what you're supposed to do. Plus, we've got the commissioner's, which I've already handed out, these rules that the Commissioner of Agriculture developed about a dozen years ago. And if you look in there, you'll see the reference to state law. For example, on the first page, they're under water, requirements for water, that they're referencing statute 346.39 subdivision 2, which is basically what that statute says, exactly what you see below there in those three, four lines on water. And you'll see that throughout these standards, that there's numerous references to state law.
And Mr. Chair, the statute that Senator Dill referred to only applies to veterinary facilities and boarding facilities, not breeders.
Also, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to comment on that. It's been my experience that when we are dealing with breeders that are problematic, obviously wouldn't be there if they were not, and they are USDA licensed, and I start leveraging through other agents that inspect, who I work with on a consistent daily basis, and we share information back and forth in regards to data on breeders. As soon as that pressure is leveraged, they rescind their USDA license, and now they go as a private breeder, point of sale from their home, and everybody with the advent of the Internet becomes an individual entrepreneur, and he doesn't need the USDA. So when they back off, now there's nothing. So we have nothing to relegate back to. So it has to go back down to local units of government, and we need a regulatory language that licenses them on an annual basis.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, just a point of clarification. What part of business are we on at this point?
Your amendment, Mr. Scott.
And do we have that language, Mr. Knopf? It hasn't been read.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, which did you want to go?
Well, I'm a little torn on this because I'm afraid that if we just eliminate them from the program completely, the fee will fall on such a small number, it will be so hugely large that it wouldn't be unreasonable. You know, Senator Betzel, I know we have a duty to do something, but I also know that we're not comfortable sending a bill out of the committee that we're not happy with. And I'd like to see you get something done, but I don't know that we're going to get accomplished today, and I don't know what the chair thinks of this, but if I was trying to move this issue along, I think to lay it on the table till the next committee might not be the worst thing that would happen here, and give everybody kind of a chance to visit about some of these things.
Senator Scoy, did you make that as a motion?
I was just visiting with Senator Betzold.
Mr. Chair, it's up to the committee's choice, obviously. And obviously the chair has the inherent authority to lay the bill over. The committee has the authority to table it. I've still got a couple of stops to go on this bill, but I do want to respect the committee process here and make sure that it's something that that we can support as well.
Right now, members, on before us, Senator Scoy, did you move to table this bill?
No, Mr. Chair, I did not, and I think that I'm going to withdraw the amendment that's on the table in the hopes that the bill gets laid over, but I'm not going to do that. Somebody else can move that stuff.
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chairman, I would move to table Senate File 7.
Okay. And recording move to table, and the table motion is not debatable. Am I
that's
right?
That's correct.
That's correct.
Okay. All those in favor of tabling the Betzel bill, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Bill's tabled.
Thank you. Chair members.
Right here.
Well,
this is going to be my nighttime.